Coming up next, got Tom Haberstroh reacting to Jaylen Brown, Boston to Philadelphia. Shocking decision. You heard my emergency podcast reaction episode on Wednesday night. I've had a little time to chill out, relax. I'm still in shock, though, after all the time. But Tom and I get into that. We go deep into that, as well as everything else happening around the NBA. LeBron James, what's going to happen there with him? What's going to happen with the Lakers after their week they had? Kawhi Leonard going to the Raptors. Jalen Duren. What's going on there? And a lot else happening around the NBA right now. That's me and Tom Haberstroh right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Joining me today to talk about everything going on around NBA free agency, Tom Haberstroh. Tom, what's up?
Did anything happen last night?
Oh, my God. Look, I've had time to chill out and relax and sleep on it and think about it a lot more. And we'll get to all my thoughts about it. But first of all, I just still want to get to the shock of the trade, Tom. Jaylen Brown for 2 first round draft picks and 2 second round draft picks of the Philadelphia 76ers. And Paul George, the ghost of Paul George, the shell of his former self, Paul George, the guy who does no longer plays over 70 games, Paul George, the always hurt Paul George. So that's the version that the Celtics are getting. On the Sixer side of things, you're getting an upgrade very clearly. Where do you want to start, Tom? Do you want to start on the shock of the Philly side and being able to get rid of Paul George, a guy that you wanted the salary dump with only 2 first? Or do you want to start on the Boston side with the shock of 1 week ago, you were in on Giannis Antetokounmpo, and then you trade Jaylen Brown for Paul George. What way do you want to start? That's
the story. That's the executive of the year, Brad Stevens, the architect of the championship, completely losing the PR battle in this Jaylen Brown trade, the scuttled Giannis Antetokounmpo trade. Remember, executive of the year award is not voted by the media. That is, other executives believe he had the best year in tearing down the salaries of that Boston Celtics championship team and reloading last year. And then he tried to trade Jaylen Brown to the Milwaukee Bucks, and they said, "Nah, we'd rather take the Miami package." And did he have a plan B? It certainly doesn't look like it, because from Shams Charania's reporting on ESPN, he was trying to get 4 first-round picks from the Philadelphia 76ers in the immediate aftermath of that failed Giannis attempt. And now he's sitting on 2 first-round picks instead of 4. And I'm sitting here, Kevin, and saying, what happened in the aftermath of that Giannis attempt to trade for Giannis? Because Brad Stevens doesn't make this trade unless he thinks it is irrevocable. Totally butchered that word. He thinks it's gone to the point of no return, Kev, with Jaylen Brown. That instead of just sitting on this for the summer and deciding, yeah, let's just mend the fences. Let's get everybody in the same room. Let's talk this over. We did it back in 2022 when you got snubbed for Team USA after the finals MVP. Everything was fine. We brought everyone back. It's all good. But now, the fact that they traded him now suggests to me that while Jaylen Brown didn't make a trade request, something had to have happened that let Brad Stevens know, I got to cut bait here. I got to bail on Jaylen Brown, who is one of the most popular players in Boston Celtics history, a finals MVP, and someone that was beloved by the organization at one point, and at some point it soured to the point where they had to trade him for Paul George and 2 first-round picks. And not just Paul George and 2 first-round picks. It's Paul George and 2 first-round picks from the 76ers, the team that just sent you packing in the first round. Kev, it is a colossal PR disaster for the Boston Celtics, and I cannot wait to hear both sides of this trade, how it came to this, because Brad Stevens knows something that we don't.
Shams Charania reported that the Boston Celtics originally asked for Paul George, 5 first-round draft picks, and VJ Edgecombe. So they came way down from their initial demands from Philadelphia for Jaylen Brown, which is hard to fathom. It came so low, this low. I think the one thing you said in there, Tom, he was beloved, to be clear. But they've tried to trade him a bunch of times before. They tried to trade him for Kawhi Leonard. They tried to trade him for Kevin Durant. They, of course, tried to trade him for Giannis Antetokounmpo. There may be other instances as well in which they tried to trade Jaylen Brown. But they get back in return 2 firsts and 2 seconds with Paul George. And I think for Boston, the reason why there is so much frustration from Celtics fans, I had people texting me saying that Brad Stevens should be fired. I had people saying, like, this is the worst trade that we've seen in Boston sports history. I've seen people like, that's ridiculous. So it's not worse than Mookie Betts. I saw Mark Spears say, there's Babe Ruth in Boston sports, and then the Jaylen Brown. Please, let's relax here. This is not the most shocking trade in the last 5 years of Boston sports history. Mookie is far, 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 far more shocking than Jaylen Brown. But point being is there's a lot of shock and a lot of disgust considering the context of where we just came from, where 10 days ago, people woke up and thought Boston was going to land Giannis Antetokounmpo. They didn't. He went to the Miami Heat. And then there is this belief that they're going to get 4+ firsts, 5 firsts, really good young players, this package, that package. And then they end up with this. And he goes to Philadelphia, a rival for decades with the Sixers, to your point, Tom. I think that's where the disgust lies with this return for Boston, especially given Paul George played 25 games last year, 50-something games the year prior. He's always hurt, and he's definitely nowhere near what he was as an on-ball player in the past. However, I do think there's two ways to look at the shock of this. A, as you said, what do the Celtics know that we don't know? Does Brad Stevens have some information about injury potential? He's 30 now. He has a history of right knee soreness. He had a left Achilles tendonitis at the end of this past season. Is there something Boston knows that we don't know? Was there something about the friction between Tatum and Brown that really made this a high-risk proposition to continue? The things we don't know. You can make up anything you want to. Maybe there was a secret trade demand and that for whatever reason it's not being messaged, or they very clearly want it messaged that there wasn't a demand. I don't know. There could be something there. Or B, to me, the more worrisome potential outcome of this is that this is a new owner with the Boston Celtics and Bill Chisholm, and that this could be influence here from the Chisholm side of things to cut money, to make a deal, a panic move. I don't know the specific angle, but all I know is growing up watching the Boston Celtics trade away Antoine Walker, go get Kevin Garnett and go get Ray Allen, trading away Kendrick Perkins for Jeff Green, trading away Isaiah Thomas, trading away Marcus Smart for 3 decades. Under Danny Ainge and then under Brad Stevens, there was a courageous front office that was never afraid of the response from fans. This is another move along those lines. The difference is, in all of those instances, the return was understandable. It was something that I think may not be fans didn't agree with, but it was an understandable decision return that received the support of Wick Grosbeck, the team owner. In this instance, it's different. It's a trade that nobody likes, but it's a trade that feels rushed, that feels premature, like they didn't take it all the way, that they may have panicked. And I wonder, perhaps, could there have been some ownership meddling here from Bill Chisholm, a new owner, worried about the declining offers, worried about Jaylen Brown making this ugly and saying, we got to just do this deal. Let's just make it happen. I do not know this. I'm not reporting it. But that is a new factor worth considering with Bill Chisholm replacing Wick Grosbeck, considering how different this deal feels than all of the others with how they ended up playing out.
I think you hit it on the head, is that this is an ownership and a second apron new world in the CBA deal. You have to look at what the new owners have done over the last 3 years that have come into the NBA, into this new private equity, new influx of capital, and having these new owners come in this since the 2023 CBA with the second apron rules. We saw James Dolan, who's not a cheapskate when it comes to in-house financials. Like, he's paid for Phil Jackson. He's gone out and gotten Karl Anthony Towns. But where do they get Karl Anthony Towns? From Minnesota, a team that under A-Rod and Mark Laurie, they decided, hey, in this new projection of the CBA, we got to offload this Karl Anthony Towns contract. We can't have this long-term money on our books, and we're going to send him over to the New York Knicks. That's one ownership change while they were taking over for Glenn Taylor that now when you listen to A-Rod, he says, we traded Karl-Anthony Towns. I'm excited to see Karl-Anthony Towns win a title. We decided it. We needed to make a financial decision there and trade Karl-Anthony Towns, a good player. But in this environment, we have to trade a guy who's making that kind of money. You look at the new ownership in Charlotte. 3 years into the new ownership, they trade LaMelo Ball, the face of the franchise. You look at Dallas, Patrick Dumont and the Adelson family. They traded Luka Doncic pretty much on, right as soon as they take over, they trade Luka Doncic. You look at Jimmy Haslam buying into the Milwaukee Bucks. They trade Giannis Antetokounmpo. And now you're seeing on top, that's five of the last new six owners have traded a huge piece of their franchise, if not the face of the franchise. And these new owners are saying, look, this is my new team. I want to not only have my own players that I want to have on like my pick of the players going forward, but also this is owners that are responding to a hard cap. Let's call it what it is. If James Dolan just won a championship, is not willing to bring back Mitchell Robinson, then I think this is pretty clear that these owners are saying we are responding to the second apron salary cap and we don't want to go deep into the tax as much as we did in the past. And we're all coming together here and saying the same thing. If you're making 60 plus, 70 plus million dollars, you better be a top five player in the NBA. And if you're going deep into your 30s, we're not going to be paying that. And we certainly can't have two of those guys on the books. And that's what I think happened here, is this was a money thing. This was a financial decision. And Brad Stevens, whether it was his call or Chisholm's call, I think what happened here is Jaylen Brown's going to be making $320 million over the next five seasons. Because let's be honest, Jaylen Brown wants a contract extension. He can get 2 years, $140 million after this deal that pays him $180 million over 3 years. So if he's getting $180 million for the next 3 years and potentially $140 on top of that, $320 million over 5 years going to Jaylen Brown. Did the Boston Celtics want to pay that, Kevin? Absolutely not. We know that answer now that they've traded him for Paul George. They did not want to be on the hook for $70 million of Jaylen Brown at the back end of that extension. So I think this is another example of new ownership coming in and getting rid of the face of the franchise, in part because of the second apron and the supermax deals that a lot of these players are on. They did not want to pay it. And it seems like there's a pattern here.
I do think you're spot on, Tom. I do think that's the pattern. And for Boston, Jaylen Brown might be in kind of that zone where he's clearly a great player, incredibly talented, but perhaps not great enough to warrant the salary that he's receiving. LaMelo Ball might be in that bucket. Devin Booker might be in that bucket. I think there's a handful of players that are earning $60-plus million or on target to earn that much money that maybe you don't want to pay that much money, even though you have to pay that much money, because somebody will, clearly, as Philadelphia is willing to, at least for the next 3 years, and trading for him. And I think this could be a league-wide trend, potentially. I think for Boston, obviously, they were clearly willing to pay two guys $60-plus million since they pursued Giannis Antetokounmpo, but there's a line. Clearly, there's a line. They're willing to pay a top 10 level player that much money. Jason Tatum, they perceive as that. Giannis Antetokounmpo is undoubtedly that. But Jaylen Brown, clearly Boston does not perceive as being that level of player. Here's the one thing I'll say, just to add some context to Jaylen Brown. I didn't report this in the middle of the season, but I heard this in the middle of the season, that Boston went into the 2025-26 season planning on selling high on Jaylen Brown if an offer was out there that made sense. But then plans changed. They were on a 50-plus win pace. Jason Tatum was healthy enough to come back, and they knew we would come back in March. It happened, and they're like, you know what? We'll just stick with it and keep rolling this year and see what happens in the playoffs. And sometimes the plans you have end up changing. That's what happened for Boston this past season. But they went into last season with a plan like, hey, we could sell high on Jaylen this year. With Jason Tatum being out, he could be in a position where we want to be in the lottery. Let's sell high on Jaylen Brown and get a good return. And ended up that they let it go into the summer and they almost get Giannis Antetokounmpo. And then they miss and they end up not selling high, but they still sold. They still decided to get rid of Jaylen Brown for a return that pretty much everybody unanimously, except for some of the analytics extremists, believe is a negative return for Boston. So I do wonder, from the Boston side of things, I said this on my emergency pod last night, Tom, and I know you wrote about it on Yahoo Sports as well. So I look forward to talking about this point with you, because if the Celtics are proven to be in the right by making this decision, if we look back a year from now or 5 years from now and we're like, oh, wow, Brad Stevens is a genius. Brad Stevens won the deal. Why would that be? And I think you can look at the Paul George side of it. Paul George is a 40% guy on catch and shoot threes. Jaylen Brown, 35%, a better spot-up shooter. You can look at last year, 25 games with Philadelphia. Paul George was the more efficient pick-and-roll scorer. He was the more efficient isolation scorer. Jaylen Brown was far less efficient in those play types. So they're going from a higher volume, average efficiency Jaylen Brown to a lower volume, higher efficiency Paul George. And then where is the compensation coming from with the rest of the roster? And as you wrote about on Yahoo Sports, this might be a bet on Peyton Pritchard. So, Tom, what did you find in your research about how Boston might be thinking about this move and what it could mean for the rest of the roster, absorbing that open now volume, the touches that are going to be just absent without Jaylen Brown there?
Well, let me first off just mention that, you know, Derek White is catching a lot of flack here from Brian Windhorst's comments last night in the emergency pod that he did, that Brian Windhorst is making the connecting the dots here, saying the Celtics did not feel like Jaylen had the best season on their team. They felt that Derek White had a better season. I also think you can look at Team USA. In 2024, after he won a finals MVP, who was left off the Team USA roster and who was put onto it? It was Derek White. Not Jaylen Brown. And he felt a certain way about that. And Grant Hill went on the record to explain that, is that they wanted a better on-ball defender, a guy that would be playing high-energy defense. And Derek White and Drew Holiday made more sense on that front, filling a roster spot with those two guys rather than Jaylen Brown. And so you can look at this and say, the Boston Celtics feel like they have a redundancy in Jaylen Brown's skill set, which is he's a high-volume, high isolation guy, dribble drive guy, not a great three-point shooter. They have Jason Tatum. They had Derek White, who did not have a good three-point shooting system, but defensively, much better than Jaylen Brown. And then there's Peyton Pritchard. I know he's kind of, people laugh at the notion that he could be a mini Jalen Brunson. I'm not saying he's going to be a finals MVP and an all-NBA player. I'm not suggesting that. What I'm saying is, when you look at the numbers and when you watch him, the guy is a bucket getter. And we saw Jalen Brunson go from a Dallas Mavericks team as a backup, could not get the right oxygen and minutes to prove that he is an all-star caliber player until he left to go to New York. And then he showed, hey, everyone thinks I'm undersized. I'm not big enough, but I got the footwork and the jump shot and the tenacity to be an all-league type player. And I think the Boston Celtics are not saying Peyton Pritchard's better than Jaylen Brown. I am not saying that. And that's what I wrote. I wrote the Celtics probably do not think that Peyton Pritchard is better than Jaylen Brown. But Peyton Pritchard's making $7 million a year, $8 million a year. He's on one of the best contracts in the league. And by the way, in the games in which Jaylen Brown did not play, Peyton Pritchard was an all-league level, statistically, all-league level player, averaging 25 points a game, 7 assists, and 5 rebounds in those 10 games last year. And he was a sixth man of the year 2 years ago. And the numbers don't lie when it comes to Peyton Pritchard's potential to break out next season. When he is playing outside of Jaylen Brown, he's absolutely scoring 20, 25 points per 36 minutes. He's a bucket getter. And Jaylen Brown is making more in 1 month next season than Peyton Pritchard will make in the entire season.
Crazy. So $7 million for Peyton Pritchard, just a tiny fraction of what he'd get on the open market.
It's incredible. So Brad Stevens has to look at this and say, under a hard salary cap, because that's what it is, under a hard salary cap system, does it make more sense to have Peyton Pritchard using up a lot of those touches and those dribble drives? He's the second most efficient scorer on ISOs last season. And you got Jaylen Brown, who, let's face it, a high volume isolation scorer, but they were scoring at a higher rate, a better rate when he was off the floor and Derek White and Peyton Pritchard were leading that offense. It's just, I think Peyton Pritchard's going to have the ability to break out next season. And I am not saying that he's going to be all NBA, but I am saying that the Boston Celtics looked at the situation and said, I think we can make up our offense without Jaylen Brown and be just fine. I think there is a high potential that the Ewing theory coined by Bill Simmons could be at play here, that the Celtics actually have a better record next season than this year because of the allocation of those skill sets. And I do think that the Mitch Robinson deal is going to be a big improvement for them next year. And I think Peyton Pritchard is going to be a big reason why. I will take the over on whatever the win-loss projection is from Vegas. I think you could see a breakout season from Peyton Pritchard and better allocation of the skill sets in Boston without Jaylen Brown. And you know who also agrees with me? Is Brad Stevens, Team USA, and all the other owners and GMs who did not bite at getting Jaylen Brown at the number that he's at.
And definitely whoever Bobby Marks talked to as well. Definitely whoever yeah. he spoke to. Seventh best player on a team. But regarding Pritchard, one of the screenshots you had on your story was a graphic from Data Baller looking at Peyton Pritchard's numbers per 75 possessions versus with Jaylen Brown on the floor versus without Jaylen Brown on the floor. And without Jaylen Brown last season, Peyton Pritchard averaged 27 points, 7.6 assists, 5 boards on 61% true shooting. Nearly 40% from three as well. Plus, there are plus 9.6 in those minutes as well. We all know about the plus minus with and without Jaylen, but individually, Peyton Pritchard is somebody I know, like one of the best Celtics reporters out there, Noah Dalzell. She gets ragged on sometimes a few years ago for saying Peyton Pritchard will be an all-star someday. If it's going to happen, it's going to be this year that Peyton Pritchard becomes an all-star and that Noah will look like a genius with great foresight for the future with that prediction a few years ago that she made. And I think with Pritchard, as you said, he was a sixth man of the year. Last year, he became a starter and maintained his efficiency and was very productive. And then this coming season, I think Boston, that's what their bet is. I don't like the return in a vacuum. I think they should have gotten more for Jaylen Brown, and I think there's so much you can poke holes at with how they botched this and screwed it up. But I think if they're proven right, it's going to be because Paul George is a more efficient role player. Jaylen Brown, you can't will not play a small role, and that what's lost in volume from go-to scoring in Jaylen Brown would be compensated for with a little bit of Paul George, a little bit more Jason Tatum, a lot more Peyton Pritchard, and who knows what other ways in which we'll see them revise their system as well. So, look, I'm not ruling out that Boston ends up looking very smart in this situation. But at the end of the day, though, Tom, the best player in the deal is Jaylen Brown, and he's going to the Philadelphia 76ers, and this is undoubtedly an upgrade for their roster. This is an upgrade for Philadelphia. They got Paul George 2 years ago, hoping that Paul George could be a guy that would help keep the team afloat in the minutes that Joel Embiid was inevitably out injured, the games he was out injured. And instead, it was Paul George who played 78 games over two seasons. He was the one who was out all the time and could not be relied upon. But now, with Jaylen Brown, a guy who thus far in his career plays all the time and plays heavy minutes all the time, if that continues next season, and if Tyrese Maxey continues ascending, if Vijay Edgecombe in year two of his career takes a second year leap, and if LeBaron Filon is good as a rookie, if Joel Embiid can play half the games, Philadelphia did raise their ceiling without an absolute doubt with this deal. And it is worth giving up those future first round draft picks that they did to attach to Paul George when they already were thinking about trying to dump Paul George. And so it takes a pick or two sometimes to dump a salary, and instead you dump the salary and you get Jaylen Brown back. Mike Gansey, so far in his tenure as Sixers general manager, off to a 10 out of 10 start to get Jaylen Brown. But how high do you think Philadelphia's ceiling really is, Tom? Is this a championship contender?
I think if everything goes right, you of course have to consider the Philadelphia 76ers with Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, Jaylen Brown, Vijay Edgecombe. They're a title contender. The high end of all of the scenarios is that they're all healthy and in an Eastern Conference with the championship tax of the New York Knicks that we've seen past champions come back in their repeat quest and just fall apart physically. They don't have the same legs in this modern NBA the pace and space NBA to withstand the rigors of a repeat quest after going further than anybody else. And so if you're the Philadelphia 76ers, you're looking at this and saying, if everything breaks our way, we will be the ninth team in 9 years to win the title. My question is, does Jaylen Brown on a vengeance after this Boston Celtics ex-lover, scorned ex type vengeance tour that he is after a bad breakup, you know what you want to do? You want to be your best self and you want to go out and for Jaylen Brown, I think he is going to want to show that he is going to be the MVP in the NBA next year. And at what cost to Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid is that going to be? And that's my question, is a guy that had just as many series, playoff series, with more turnovers than assists as playoff series where he had more assists than turnovers. Is he going to, at the expense of Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey, just go nuclear on the league next season and be the high usage guy that he was for Boston last year without Jason Tatum? And that's what, to me, is the most interesting aspect of this, is what Jaylen Brown are we going to get next season? Because he missed the most twos per game in the NBA last year, high volume, low efficiency, and coming into a team that with Joel Embiid and Paul George out for half the season, they needed every bit of Tyrese Maxey healthy and being the engine of that offense. But now, when you got a rising, ascendant Vijay Edgecombe, who's way past what I think even the highest end, biggest supporters of Vijay Edgecombe coming into the draft expected him to be last year, and Tyrese Maxey, who's, in my opinion, a better engine for your offense, both in an efficiency standpoint and a playmaking standpoint than Jaylen Brown. Is Jaylen Brown going to be the all NBA?
I had him all NBA over Jalen Brunson. I'm a dope, though. Don't listen to me.
It's a regular season award, not a postseason award.
I know it is. And he was better. He should have been, but that's never mind. We can leave that.
But do you think that the touches, if you could just like kind of do the hierarchy, Kev, is Jaylen Brown going to have the highest usage rate on the team next year? Because I think so.
Yeah, probably. I'd say probably. It shouldn't come at the expense of Tyrese Maxey, who is on a real ascent. I mean, he was 28 points per game last year, 37% from three, and a very high volume off the dribble, an improving assist to turnover ratio. He's improving as a creator every single season. So no, it shouldn't come at the expense of Maxey. But I do think, if anything, should this come at the expense of Joel Embiid? Should Embiid take a severe backseat here and make it about Maxey, Brown, and Edgecombe, and Embiid instead becomes more of like a finisher, like just really, really wrap him up in the bubble wrap starting in October, more so than they already do. But like not, and I mean not just in terms of games missed, but I mean in terms of shots taken. He was at 18 shots per game last year and 32 minutes per game. Bring that down to like 12. That's what I'm thinking about with Joel Embiid, to like just really, really keep him as healthy as possible.
You think he's going to go for that?
The load on him. I don't know.
It's a good problem to have. Let me just say,
is it a good problem, or are they too top heavy, Tom? Or is it really a good problem to have? They have no depth.
I think the talent sucks. Dean Wade is not the 3-point shooter they need. Jaylen Brown is not the 3-point shooter they need. They need shooters around Joel Embiid. If Joel Embiid's going to be healthy, they need shooters around them to really put pressure on defenses to put two on Joel. The two big acquisitions there are not going to be 3-point spacers around Joel Embiid. Now, if Embiid is healthy, again, the only way that this works is if Embiid's healthy. They're not going to be a title contender or an East title contender without Joel Embiid. It's just not.
You don't trust Dem Bona? You don't trust Bona?
I don't. I don't. Maybe if they brought back Kelly Oubre, then I'd be like, yeah. this. Look, man, the reason why I tweeted this last night in the aftermath of the deal, I didn't like the deal for both sides, is because I feel like Boston should have just sat this out and just tried to make this work with Jaylen. And I didn't think that they should have traded Jaylen at that return. On the Philly side, I just worry that the fit is not great. And I think people are caught up in that the asking price for Jaylen in terms of assets is such that in a vacuum, you do that deal. But I do think there is a downside risk here, is that Embiid is not happy with his touches. Tyrese Maxey gets his ascendance gets kind of cut. And they're all just bowing for Jaylen Brown in this vengeance tour that he's going to have. And I don't know how that impacts Vijay Edgecombe or Filon or the younger guys. It might work out. It might not. But I don't love the fit on the Philadelphia 76ers. And I think it is an amazing thing that he is now on an intra-division rival, Philadelphia 76ers team, to take away an all-NBA player from your rival and putting it on your team is definitely a coup. But I want to make sure that he is the right fit next to Embiid, because in a vacuum, I don't think he is a good fit next to Maxey and next to Embiid. And I will say, Gansey's got an interesting dilemma here. Do you give the extension that he's going to ask for and make it a 5-year, $320 million commitment to Jaylen Brown as he gets into his 30s? Or does he say, look, we want to play out the season, see how things go, and then we will have substantive talks later. But right now, you know what Jaylen Brown wants, and he wants a long-term commitment in the same way that Kawhi Leonard wants that long-term commitment with Toronto.
They need a bench. That's one thing I do worry about with Philadelphia. I love the potential of their top end. I think, as Eric said in the live chat, there could be a hierarchy issue with what Philly has with this current roster at the top. And as you're talking about, Tom, when it comes to what version of Jaylen Brown are you going to get, and who does that take away from? But you look at their bench right now, it's like a Dembona, Dominic Barlow, LeBaron Filon. Like that's pretty much it right now. That's it. And like, they got Ariel Hakpoti as well. Whoop-de-doo. Like, there's just not much here on this Sixers bench. And that's where my concern is, Tom, considering what has been the trend of these recent champions. It's teams that go 10 deep and have different ways they can play and different lineup configurations. And Philadelphia, their top five is really nice. Embiid, Wade, Brown, Edgecombe, Maxey. That's a really nice starting five, but you're really betting on Dominic Barlow to be, you know, good over a higher volume over the season. Trenton Watford and Justin Edwards, who showed some flashes, but who are your wing defenders? Who are your wing stoppers? Can Jaylen Brown be your second best wing defender behind Dean Wade over the full duration of the season while also being on a high volume? There's a lot of questions about this roster, and I think those top end players in the team are going to be really taxed on both ends of the floor unless they add more role player depth. So there's concern there for Philadelphia, but ultimately I like the deal a little bit more than you do, Tom. I think for Philly it's worth the risk. This is a team that was inching towards or completely all in already on complete irrelevancy, and Jaylen Brown makes the Sixers a more relevant team, a team that has a chance, that you feel better about what their floor can be because of what Jaylen Brown can do, leading the Celtics to 56 wins last year, but also what he can do instead of Paul George, the always absent Paul George. But it also raises their ceiling, considering we know what Jaylen Brown is capable of on the biggest stage as a former Finals MVP. And so I think it both raises their floor and their ceiling, and it's worth giving up those two future first-round draft picks, the 2031 unprotected from Philadelphia and the 2028 complicated. It's kind of the Clippers first, it's kind of the Sixers first, depending on what's better. It's not quite a swap, but it is a swap. But Boston wouldn't have to give anything out. It's more like the best of Philly or the Clippers first that they're getting, and that could be high value. That, like, the Clippers, I don't like the Clippers' chances of making the playoffs in 2028, Tom. Obviously things can change by the 27-28 season, but you look at the Western Conference, the way those teams are ascending and getting better, or should stay good in the coming years, like OKC and San Antonio. The Clippers being in the top eight come mid-April, I don't know about that after dealing away Kawhi Leonard to the Toronto Raptors. The Clippers are going in a younger direction. The East is getting stronger. Maybe Boston will be better than people think, despite losing Brown. The Sixers should be better. The Raptors will definitely be better after getting Kawhi Leonard. Who do you feel better about, Tom? Is it the Toronto Raptors adding Kawhi Leonard, or is it the Philadelphia 76ers adding Jaylen Brown? You're nodding your head about Toronto already. You think Toronto raised their ceiling more?
Yeah. I love Kawhi Leonard. I think he's so good and a playoff riser, consistently a playoff riser. That's not the case with Jaylen Brown. His numbers have been down in three out of the last four seasons. The one season that he did have a great postseason was the one he won Finals MVP. It wasn't a unanimous MVP. You know, when Steph wins MVP or when Jokic wins MVP, Giannis, it is unanimous. 11 voters all go for that Finals MVP. Jaylen Brown had a really strong run in 24. But let's not forget in 23, in Game 7 against the Miami Heat, who had the 8 turnovers, the 23 shots to Jason Tatum's 13 shots, and it was a disaster performance for Jaylen Brown. Came back in 2024 and was awesome. And four voters in the finals voted for Jason Tatum for the finals MVP, and seven voted for Jaylen Brown. And you're hoping, if you're the Philadelphia 76ers, that finals MVP is the guy that you're going to get. But this was another series. They just watched Jaylen Brown have more turnovers. He had a negative turnover ratio, assist to turnover ratio in the series against Philly this time around. And the hope is that he is that guy, the 2024 guy, not the rest of them that was up and down in the postseason. Now, on Kawhi Leonard, I just think that if you're trying to win a championship or win in the East, they've got so many dogs on that team. They got Colin Murray Boyles, they got Scotty Barnes, they got Kawhi Leonard, and now this Allen Graves kid from Santa Clara who projects as just a defensive menace that, yeah, he's a rookie. He's not going to be a championship contributor right away. Dylan Harper's is an anomaly. That's an exception to the rule. But if you're looking for three guys in Scotty Barnes and CMB and Kawhi come playoff time, I have much more faith in them in the playoffs than I do Joel Embiid being healthy enough and Jaylen Brown being efficient enough, because I just haven't seen it enough from Jaylen Brown. He had one great, great playoff run, but it's a lot more mixed outside of that. And I don't want people to run away with this finals MVP in 24 and saying that's what you get every postseason. It is not with Jaylen Brown. And I think Celtics fans remember that from different playoff runs of the past. And I do think, for me, Toronto, I said this yesterday, they just got a bunch of OG Anunoby types on the team. And I saw what the Knicks did last, you know, in the postseason run. And I just feel like they're going to be so much harder to play against than the Sixers.
So on my emergency podcast after the Kawhi trade, I raved about that for Toronto, and I feel exactly the same today. I think great, great acquisition for Toronto. They help solve their end game offensive clunkiness with a go-to score of Kawhi's caliber while not sacrificing their defensive DNA. However, just playing devil's advocate, Tom, are we possibly overrating Kawhi Leonard here? He hasn't made it out of the first round since the 2020-21 season. He played two games in the 23 playoffs before getting hurt, two games in the 24 playoffs before getting hurt. They lost in a game 7 in 2025 to the Denver Nuggets. Last year, they lost in the play-in to the Golden State Warriors. They didn't make it out of it. Draymond Green shut down Kawhi Leonard in the final moments of the game. It's been 5 years. It'll be 6 years next year with the Raptors in the playoffs with Kawhi Leonard if he makes it to the finish line. And so I love Kawhi. I'm a Kawhi fan. I've always been a Kawhi fan, even when it was ugly at the end in San Antonio. I loved Kawhi Leonard. I loved all the additions of Kawhi Leonard. I love seeing him limp in the locker room his lone year with Toronto leading them to the finals. I'll always have that memory in my brain of just this warrior just battling out that injury and leading Toronto to an NBA finals, all of Canada to an NBA finals, even the Clippers version through all the annoying things with Uncle Dennis and the absences and the demands and aspiration. I just like watching Kawhi Leonard, but I'm also a rational person and see the facts on the table that he had his first healthy season, the best regular season of his entire career at 34 years old, and he's now 35 years old with a very long and scary injury history. And I feel like we're just sort of just anchored to what he did last year and ignoring everything else. There's a lot of risk for Toronto in this acquisition too, though, is what I'm saying here, Tom.
Yep. I think if the question is who has the higher ceiling, like in terms of who raised their ceiling more, I think it is the Toronto Raptors, but they might have a lower floor here in terms of an aging superstar in Kawhi Leonard, that it doesn't seem like, remember, we were wondering if his career was over just a few years ago. He missed the entire year with the ACL injury. And at 35 years old, I don't think anyone ever expected him to be as good as he was last year, given how he was hanging on by a thread just a few years ago. So I totally get your point here is, yeah, if he's playing, he's awesome, both ends of the floor, and as automatic in clutch time as we've seen in the NBA over the last two decades. But I think if you told me that I was getting seven games of Kawhi Leonard or seven games of Jaylen Brown, which one am I taking? I think it's Kawhi Leonard. And I also think if the question is Joel Embiid going to have enough in the tank to be in a postseason run, I would like to see more bigs on that roster that can fill the gap for Joel Embiid if he misses 40 games next year and misses a bunch of games like he does every year in postseason. And so do I think that Jaylen Brown fixes that issue? No, I don't. And so is the superstar acquisition that they got? I mean, think about it. They got Jaylen Brown, a second team All NBA, and would have been first team if it weren't for Cade Cunningham getting the hall pass in that in the exemption, right? For the Paul George contract, and it's a great in terms of value upgrade from Paul George to Jaylen Brown, certainly. But I kind of wish that they had gotten, if in an ideal world, gotten someone that can fill the shoes of four. I don't know, not saying they could have gotten Karl-Anthony Towns, but someone like that, that would have been able to slide over at the five in case Joel Embiid is hurt. So that's why I'm not as big on the Jaylen Brown acquisition as many people are. I would say for both teams, maybe if I go with the Boston Celtics, if I was putting a grade on this, it'd be like a C+. If I was the 76ers, it's probably a B-. I don't love the either deal. But if you're telling me it's Paul George over the next 2 years or Jaylen Brown over the next 3 years at that number, I'm like, okay, I do that deal, especially with the draft capital. But Kev, if it's 5 years of $320 million to Jaylen Brown, I don't love that. I don't love that. And that's what's really this is all about is, do you think that Jaylen Brown is going to be a top five player in the NBA over the next 5 years? Because he's going to be paid like it. And that was the decision from Brad Stevens. We don't think we're willing to pay that. And Mike Gansey has to answer that question, because $320 million is what Jaylen Brown wants.
It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. That 2028 pick, I want to tie this all together with the Clippers-Raptors deal and the Celtics-Sixers deal. The Celtics get this 2028 first-round pick from Philadelphia. That is a Sixers pick if it lands in the top eight. And if it doesn't, it could be the best of the Clippers or Sixers pick. In all likelihood, that would be the Clippers pick. I would imagine during the 27-28 season, the Sixers make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. I would imagine during the 27-28 season, the Clippers don't make the playoffs, because you look at the Western Conference, so not this season, but next season, I'd imagine OKC will still be better. San Antonio will still be better. The Wolves with Ant, the Nuggets with Jokic, the Lakers with Luka, that's five teams already. I'd imagine that the Blazers on the up and up will be better. I'd imagine the Mavericks with Cooper Flagg ascending will be better. That's seven teams. Maybe the Grizzlies, maybe the Jazz, maybe the Warriors, maybe the Suns. We are at 11 right now. It is very possible the Clippers are the 12th or 13th team in the Western Conference for the 27-28 season. And if they're not, they might just be the 10th or the 9th at best as a play-in team, which still has lottery odds under this new rule. And so for Boston to get that pick, it is valuable. It is a valuable piece as a projected lottery pick for the 2028 draft. And who knows what it's going to look like. We don't even know what 2027 is going to look like quite yet. Never mind 2028. Mm-hmm. But for the Clippers, they very clearly are going in a different direction here, Tom. They are getting Brandon Ingram. They got Benedict Mathurin, Darius Garland. They drafted Keaton Wagler with the 5th pick. Last year, Yannick Kohn-Niederhauser, Kobe Sanders. They got some good quality young players. But the Clippers are right now a team where it's just a clean slate ultimately. And I'm not expecting them to be very good at all. So that's a good thing for Boston. It's a good thing for Toronto to get Kawhi Leonard. And for the Clippers to get what they did for Kawhi Leonard is a big win. But that doesn't mean it's going to lead to many wins on the court.
You know the Magic 8-Ball? played with as kids.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yep. Yeah, you shake it up. Yeah, and something message pops up. Yep.
Yeah. Sometimes it says like reply hazy, try again later, or reply Outlook not so good. I think every team in the NBA, Kev, is shaking that magic eight ball, and it's just replying the same thing as ask again later. Things are too hazy. We have no idea what the projection is going to be in 2 to 3 years. I think it's a fool's errand to try to project what the NBA is going to look like in 2 or 3 years. Look what the Lakers just did. They got rid of LeBron. They brought in Walker Kessler and Austin Reeves. And now we don't even know how good they're going to be in 2, 3 years. If Luka Doncic is going to even be there. We just saw Giannis get traded. We just saw LaMelo Ball got traded. Kawhi Leonard got traded. James Harden's still a free agent. LeBron is still a free agent. I think there's so much upheaval and turnover in the NBA right now that any traded pick in 2, 3 years, I think it's a fool's errand to try to project what the NBA looks like. I think it is so crazy what we're like. 4 years ago, the Detroit Pistons are the worst team in NBA history. Longest losing streak in NBA history, and now they win the East. I think the New York Knicks, before they got Jalen Brunson, no way we could have predicted that the New York Knicks would have won the 26th NBA championship. I think the NBA is in a total, total state of flux, that these draft picks that are being traded right now, in 2031, in 2033, it's insane to try to project this. We don't even know what the draft lottery is going to look like. There couldn't even be a draft lottery in 3 years. And so I think it's just the NBA, while I think the NBA is trying to increase parity and trying to give everyone a shot and having, you know, everyone have a quote unquote chance at winning a championship, what it really is what the NBA wants is a salary cap and not have to spend so much money in the luxury tax. And the owners are using the parity thing to make sure that they're going to hard cap all these contenders and that the Boston Celtics are going to have to trade Jaylen Brown and that the Denver Nuggets are going to have to look at their books of Aaron Gordon and Christian Brown and Jamal Murray a couple years after, and they already got rid of Michael Porter Jr. Every champion has basically had to either blow it up or look at their books and say, yeah, we got to trade those guys. We can't afford to have Damian Lillard on the team anymore. We got to blow it up and sign Miles Turner and see if we can make this work. And then we're going to trade Giannis. Every team right now, I feel like, is in a state of flux. And I think these draft picks, teams just, I just don't know what the NBA is going to look like. The Clippers and the Philadelphia 76ers 2 years from now. What's going to happen with Joel Embiid?
It's impossible to know. To your point, it's impossible. It's like I make that prediction, but I don't know. I have no idea. Like, there's injuries that could happen. There's unexpected trades. The Clippers could trade for a star player who becomes available and be at the top of the West. Who knows? It's impossible. I didn't even mention the Rockets in that little group. They could be better. They could be way worse. I don't know how that's going to unfold. So it's impossible to predict. All I know is that I would bet on the Clippers to not be a top team by 27-28, but they also have no incentive to be at the bottom of the standings either, considering they don't have their own draft picks. So we'll see what happens with all that. You mentioned LeBron, Tom. LeBron is still unsigned. He's got a wandering eye. He's looking around. He's reviewing his options. He's looking at Golden State. He's looking at Cleveland. He's looking at Miami. There's been reporting out of Denver and Minnesota and Philadelphia that those teams inquired about LeBron James. I wrote something on Yahoo Sports yesterday. I ranked all 29 potential destinations for LeBron James. And my top teams were Golden State. I had Minnesota up there, Cleveland, Denver, Miami, the usual suspects. They're the ones that scored highly on my rankings and also the ones who happened to be in this conversation for him. And one little note I had in there was, according to my league sources, LeBron James has had discussions about filming this entire season for either a documentary or a series that would run throughout the year. And there's the possibility of him doing live streaming throughout the year as well attached to the season. It may suggest that this is a farewell season, but like with many great artists and bands over the years, sometimes they have multiple farewell tours. There's one farewell tour, then there's another farewell tour, then another farewell tour, and another farewell tour. So I don't know, it necessarily suggests anything about this being the final year for LeBron James. If he goes to Cleveland, I'd imagine that would increase that probability. But for LeBron, have you heard anything about this, Tom, with him, where he could go? Do you have any sense of what he could do, or what do you think he should do if you don't really have any idea on the former question?
Yeah, given your reporting, I think it only confirms my belief that it's going to be Cleveland. I think it's going to be Cleveland. The Miami Heat certainly, it seems, looks like they have interest in bringing him back from all the reporting that we've seen out there. But I think when you hear Rich Paul saying the factor that's going to be the primary driver in this decision is going to be happiness, and we're going to film this, or we have plans to film this and create a series or documentary, which destination has the lowest stakes? That if he joins, there's not going to be a title make or break, blame LeBron if they don't win a title. It's Cleveland. Right? Because he's already won a title in Cleveland. They're not going to look at this next year and say it's championship or bust, because he already delivered the golden championship in 2016. And to me, if LeBron wants happiness, whatever that means, I think it's Cleveland, because he knows that in Cleveland he has power and he can say, hey, I want this player, I want that player. And you guys have clearly shown that over the last couple of years, with the highest payroll in the NBA and still flaming out in the playoffs year after year, you don't know what it takes to win a championship in the same way that I do, as I've brought a championship to every team that I've gone to. And I think, to me, LeBron James's next move is going back to Cleveland. Now, if Steph Curry has something to say about that and he's able to convince LeBron James to do it in Golden State, maybe that changes things. But I think if he does it in Golden State as a farewell tour, I think it gets kind of convoluted with Draymond and Steph and Steve Kerr. I think it's more interesting for me that if he does it in Cleveland, it makes more sense that he goes back there. I don't really think the basketball fit is all that relevant to LeBron right now. I think if it is just happiness, it's not championship or bust. Like, Rich Paul, Kev, could have said he wants to win a championship first and foremost, and that's what's going to drive the decision. That's why I think this is going to be Cleveland and not Golden State or Miami.
Rich Paul did have multiple quotes, though. He did have another quote where he's like, it's about winning. But he also had the quote about complete happiness. And when he talked about complete happiness, he said within under the umbrella of complete happiness is winning. So I do think with LeBron, he is very happy when he's in Ohio. I know he likes being there. I know he enjoys living there. I know a lot of people speak poorly about Cleveland. I've never visited personally. I have nothing to say. I don't know.
There's no place like home, Kev, right?
Yeah, there's no place like home. Exactly. And so I think there's an element of it here with LeBron James, whereas if he goes to the Bay Area, it's a new place for a guy in his 40s. He doesn't know how much he's going to like living there, commuting there to the arena, to the practice facility. He doesn't know what the rhythm of the week and the days are going to be like, going to the airport and everything else. It's all new for a guy in his 40s, whereas Cleveland, it's home. And I do think there's an element of that it does point towards Cleveland as his potential destination, as well as this, Tom. When I reported on Sunday that the Warriors were targeting an Anthony Davis trade and then a LeBron James signing, very quickly it became, well, we're not going to go for Anthony Davis. We're telling Jimmy Butler that we're not going to be trading him. How much of that was because the Wizards' price was too high for Anthony Davis? And the flip side of this conversation is, well, if the Warriors are unwilling to trade Jimmy Butler and whatever amount of picks it takes to go get Anthony Davis, could the Cavaliers be a team that goes out and gets LeBron's guy from Washington, goes out and gets Anthony Davis? Could we see them put Mobley on the table for Anthony Davis in picks? Could they put Jared Allen and Strus and Schroeder on the table to go get Anthony Davis? Could they be the team that does what makes LeBron happy? As Brian Windhorst reported over the week, he hinted multiple times that Cleveland was going for Jaylen Brown. They missed on Jaylen Brown. They didn't get Jaylen Brown. But could they instead go and get Anthony Davis to make LeBron happy, to improve his happiness to go to Cleveland? Yeah, so
see, that now thought, you're talking.
That is that mm-hmm. thought has crossed my mind, Tom. I'm not reporting that. I have not heard that anywhere. Just my own personal thought, kind of, you know, putting, you know, pieces together.
The James Harden aspect is interesting, right? Because he identifies yes. Cleveland last year and says, I want to go there because they're going to have the ability to extend me and get me my contract that I want. That, curiously, was exactly the number that Cleveland could have in terms of the Darius Garland deal, the swaparoo there. I don't know how he fits into all this. Does LeBron James look at James Harden and Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley and say, and Jared Allen, and say, that's the crew that I want to go with on my farewell tour? Or is there some sort of sign and trade with James Harden where James Harden gets his money, but they use his contract to go get another player that LeBron wants? That's why I think it's so fascinating, is LeBron still, by the metrics, he's still the best player in free agency this year, which is nuts at 41 years old. Estimated plus minus has this projection of your value, on-court value, on-court impact. And it is as good as any free agent this year, including Jalen Duren. And so if you're Rich Paul, you're like, hey, this isn't just a Hallmark movie that you're acquiring. It's also a guy who averaged, you know, 27-7-7 last year and was all-star, all-NBA level when he did play but didn't make the requirement to be eligible. It's just like, it's so crazy to think that a decade after winning the championship in Cleveland, that seemed like he was in the twilight of his career, that he's right back here being the chess master, being the puppet master, and being able to basically call his shots in multiple locations, where now Golden State is kind of in a holding pattern. Miami is still trying to figure out a way to bring him home back to Miami, where he won his first title. It's just, it speaks to LeBron's greatness and his power that he's still at this age, even though he's not in LA, he's very much at the controls of free agency.
Absolutely is. And clearly still has the power to, push a team to do something for him. We'll see with Cleveland with what happens there. But if they were in on Jaylen Brown and they were willing to put Mobley on the table to get Jaylen Brown, or if they were willing to put Allen and other pieces on the table to go get Jaylen Brown, what else are they willing to do, right? Is it something for AD? Is it something involving flipping James Harden? Because I'll tell you what, from a pure basketball standpoint, I don't love the fit with Mitchell and Harden and LeBron. I think it's a little bit too much of your turn, my turn with Cleveland. And I have some concerns with how those guys would fit together, particularly with Harden, with his style of play. And I'm a James Harden guy, but I don't love that fit necessarily. I don't. I do think it would take the workload off LeBron a bit, though, Tom. We did see him show a willingness to be the third wheel behind Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves, so perhaps he would be okay with that. But then that creates a whole different set of issues, because LeBron, his shot fell off last year playing next to those guys. LeBron, with a lower volume role, only shot 32% from three, one of the lowest marks of his entire career. So that would need to improve dramatically. So I'd have my concerns with the fit there. Who's your wing stopper as well? You lost Dean Wade. There's some concerns there with that Cleveland roster. But who knows? He might just want to go home, because, as you said, there is no place like home, and maybe that's what he ends up doing. Nonetheless, that all reports are he's in no hurry to make a decision. We'll see what happens there. Couple other loose notes. Kelly Eco over at Yahoo Sports, our colleague, said DeMar DeRozan wants to accelerate his exit from the Sacramento Kings. Things are interesting there with Sacramento. There's been the reporting around Domantas Sabonis possibly wants to play for a winning team as well. The Kings have interest in Jalen Duren. I've reported that the Pistons have no interest in signing and trading Jalen Duren. I think there's a threshold, a number where they would be willing. And we saw Walker Kessler, of course, go for a lot. But with the Kings, things are interesting. with Sacramento possibly making some moves and having interest in Jalen Duren with the Detroit Pistons.
Yeah, do they just buy out or not buy out DeMar DeRozan? He has a non-guarantee for this season and just say, hey, it's been real. Go sign wherever you want. And I think that might be a potential for Miami, is a guy that Miami could use another wing scorer and a guy who can not distribute and playmake at this stage of his career, but a guy, another veteran that they can look at. Like, we're just buying low on DeMar DeRozan and trying to go at this with the kind of cap space deficit that they have. They don't have a lot of wiggle room to add. And I wonder if DeMar DeRozan is a Tim Hardaway Jr., Davion Mitchell, Pelle Larsen, a guy that fits there, not as a three-point shooter next to next to Giannis and Bam, but a guy off the bench that can be your scorer and to keep, you know, things afloat as they deal with a lot of wing scoring issues there in Miami. I think Domantas Sabonis and Zach LaVine, this is the problem in today's NBA, is the contracts for those two guys are so prohibitive that when you're dealing in an apron world, how many teams are willing to take on that salary? This isn't LaMelo Ball, where a team sees the high upside of LaMelo Ball and they're going to go and strike on a deal with LaMelo Ball for Minnesota. I think it's a lot trickier with Sabonis and the lack of defense, the lack of shooting. It's not a great fit. And for all the teams that are loading up this year, I don't see where Sabonis goes. Like, I could talk myself into, you know, now that Detroit has lost a couple pieces off their 60-win team next year, do they go try to get Zach LaVine and figure out a way to bring in a high-level shooter and not have to be a high-usage guy? Does he become a piece that the Detroit Pistons look at and bringing in on an expiring deal? But the contracts are so crazy for both of those guys.
I know. It's tough. And plus, like, if you were to sign and trade Jalen Duren, you'd be dealing with base year compensation, which complicates the number going out versus the numbers going in a deal, which we don't need to get into unless it becomes a reality. But I think for Detroit, Duren will be back in Detroit next season is my prediction as of now. But we'll see how that all plays out as well. Moving down the coast in California, we talked about the Warriors, just talked about the Kings, talked about the Clippers already. The Lakers had a big Wednesday as well. LeBron out. In is Colin Sexton, Mamu, Grimes, and Walker Kessler. Utah got more for Walker Kessler after playing five games last season than the Boston Celtics got for Jaylen Brown. Hard to fathom the Lakers ended up giving up as much as they did in a sign-in trade with Utah Jazz, giving up unprotected firsts in 2031 and 33, and then swaps in 28 and 30 to go out and get Walker Kessler. On paper, Tom, without a doubt, Walker Kessler is a great fit with Luka Doncic. He is an elite lob guy near the rim, a great finisher, can put the ball on the floor one or two times and finish with real good feel and touch and coordination. Last year with Utah, he's a guy since he was in high school, has always tried to be a guy who shoots threes. Last year, he started to make threes on only five games, not going to overreact, but he shot well from three, shot well from the free throw line. Maybe that sustains. Maybe that doesn't. We'll see how it plays out. And the reason why he's getting paid the big money, 4 years, $130 million, is because of his defense. He's a really talented rim protector, really big, going to help the Lakers out in a big, big, big way with his rim protection. But giving up everything that you did and now not having the ability to trade other future first-round draft picks outright on a team that right now still doesn't really have a wing stopper, who is there? Wing on this team. Who is their OG and an OB? Who is their guy that can do that? They don't have it. And so I do worry about this Lakers roster being just a very fun regular season team, but not a team that actually has championship aspirations come middle of April.
I'm not saying we're on Luka watch yet, but this is a really, really all-in move for Walker Kessler because they don't have control or any tradable first-round picks going forward. I have that correct,
none.
Right, Kev? That this is
none.
At this point, that's they're it. Cornered.
Yep, they're
and,
done.
And you're right. They don't have a filled out roster. They got a big three here with Austin Reeves and Luka and Walker Kessler. But if this doesn't work out, the Lakers don't have a real pivot point. Besides, we're the Lakers and we always get superstars. And we saw LeBron, how that did not work out, and he decided he wanted to go elsewhere, and it wasn't even on a, hey, I'll take the minimum to be back. Let's reload around Luka, and I'll take a backseat. No. He's like, I'm out of here. And again, the new ownership that is coming in and essentially saying, yeah, let's go. I don't know whether this is Pelinka or someone else is saying, let's put all our chips in Walker Kessler, who played 5 games last year and fits the prototype as a lob threat, as a high-level rim protector, defender. He's not a perimeter defender that can switch on to other guys. You want more of those. I feel like Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively were better at that than Walker Kessler can be. But this is a very, very thin roster right now. And if you're Luka Doncic, we always talk about Anthony Edwards, right? Like, he might be the next disgruntled superstar in the next couple years, but I wouldn't rule out that Luka Doncic after this summer, I would not rule out the chances that Luka Doncic decides, this ain't it. Austin Reeves and Walker Kessler are not the championship material that I need. And I'm not saying he's going to ask out in LA anytime soon, but they've got a lot of work to do, Kev, before they can convince Luka Doncic that he can win a championship in LA.
I think it's scary. I mean, we're obviously not quite there yet, to your point, just like we're not there yet with Anthony Edwards, or, you know, but like, we're nearing the point that it becomes a conversation if things don't get better this season, or it's very clear that they don't have a path to being a championship contender. Because I think with Jake LaRavia, Quentin Grimes, Cameron Carr, Jared Vanderbilt, Bronny James, those aren't wing defenders that are up to the level necessary in today's NBA to be true wing stoppers. And I like the names on paper that they got. I like Colin Sexton. I think he's a good spark plug guard. Quentin Grimes is a nice, like, up and down wing. Sometimes he has some good games for you off the bench. Sometimes he goes cold, but like, you ride those highs. Mamu, I think, is one of the more underrated players in all of the NBA, a do it all guy that can play the four for them. I like Mamu, but ultimately they're missing a key figure in today's modern NBA. And that's the player. We saw the Knicks go out and trade 5 firsts for Mikal Bridges, go out and get OG Anunoby. The Celtics winning with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, OKC with Jalen Williams and a big SGA and all the guys they have at the wing position. Alex Caruso, who they get from Chicago, who left Los Angeles. They had a wing before the Lakers did. So these guys are really important in today's league because of how versatile they are to being able to defend quicker guards, but also sometimes be able to defend bigger guys on a switch. And I don't trust that Lakers team defensively around Walker Kessler, and I've got some concerns there. We'll see if they make other moves. We'll see, but I don't love the way that way is trending. Another move that I didn't like yesterday, Tom, the Nuggets signing Marvin Bagley. I think the conspiracy theorist might be onto something. They just want to inflate the on-off differential for Nikola Jokic in signing these guys. That's what it is. Bagley is okay. He's okay, and I think the conspiracy theorist might be onto something with these decisions. Marvin Bagley. Yes.
Wow. It's a thing. I love this. Keep your third eye open. They're getting purposely bad backups for Jokic so that it inflates his on-off splits. That's amazing.
Yeah. What else was yesterday? John Collins to the Pistons.
Oh, Tobias Harris. You had a strong take on Tobias going to San Antonio. The second leading scorer on the Detroit Pistons, a team that won 60 games and oftentimes in the playoffs was their best scorer on the wing. Guy is, as Bomani Jones called it, Mr. Bankman, just like the guy who's had $320 million on his payroll, like over his NBA career, signs with the San Antonio Spurs that were a couple games or a couple mind melts away from winning a championship. I don't hate the move, but you're right in that it's not, they already have Harrison Barnes, who does a lot of the similar things that Tobias Harris does, but he did cash in after a good postseason run.
Yeah, he had a great postseason run, 7 straight games of 20 points. And then by the end of the series, he looked like more like the Tobias Harris that Philadelphia fans learned to hate over his 6 years there. And Tobias Harris is getting attacked, targeted defensively, doesn't make quick enough decisions with the ball in his hands, not a high volume shooter, not a high efficiency shooter as well, helping off him, clogging the paint for the Pistons. Tobias Harris is a very solid player, but if this is how you're dedicating your mid-level exception, I don't love it for San Antonio. I also don't love the fact that now adding Tobias Harris means that you're going to be taking away important minutes for development and experience from Carter Bryant, a guy that I really believe in as somebody who can be an elite wing stopper, a guy who brings size, who has the ability to be a lob threat, who plays within his role and makes quick decisions. I think Carter Bryant is the guy that you want to truly invest in. And if Carter Bryant becomes that guy, great. Like, maybe you just flip Tobias Harris and you trade him $15 million tradable salary. Maybe you trade away Keldon Johnson, whatever the deal is. Maybe then Carter Bryant becomes the guy anyway. But I do not love the Tobias Harris acquisition. Going back to his time in Detroit the first time years ago, I was never the biggest fan of Tobias Harris. And at this point now, after his time with the Clippers, with the Sixers, with the Pistons, it's just, he's okay. He's okay. And I feel like Spurs fans are almost overreacting to how tough of a postseason Keldon Johnson had. Keldon Johnson was the sixth man of the year, and this was his first postseason experience with the San Antonio Spurs, and it wasn't great. But like, let's not act like Keldon Johnson didn't have a great regular season, and it wasn't great for him. But like, I don't want Mitch Johnson feeling like he's going to give his old wily veteran Tobias Harris minutes. Just like I don't want the Pistons last year. Pistons fans were telling me, "Oh, we can't trade Tobias Harris. We can't trade Harris. He's our veteran leader. Of course you can trade Tobias Harris. What are we talking about?" And I worry that the same thing could happen with Mitch Johnson, who has already shown symptoms of favoring his vets with the way he handled De'Aaron Fox last year. So I think there's risk here with San Antonio. I'd love to be wrong. I'd love to see Wemby hoist the trophy in a year, but I don't love that addition for San Antonio, no.
Yeah, as good as he was for that stretch, Tobias Harris, 29% from three in the Orlando series, and then 29.6% from three against Cleveland.
Exactly. So not the first time either.
No, career 34% three-point shooter in the playoffs. So
yep.
He projects as an elite catch-and-shoot guy, you know, Rashard Lewis type, but he's not that guy. So it's a swing for the San Antonio Spurs. They needed size at the four position. Obviously, Julian Champagne and Devin Vassell played that position admirably as undersized fours. Harrison Barnes was, you know, Harrison Barnes at the end of his career wasn't able to pitch in as much as he might have otherwise and earlier in his career. But I didn't, you know, OKC, I think Adai Mara, as we've talked about, that acquisition on draft night was so important for what they're trying to do against the San Antonio Spurs and reloading for next year. The San Antonio Spurs, Oklahoma City, New York, they basically stood pat outside of that. And I think every team is going to come for those three teams. Like the favorites, OKC, San Antonio, and New York. I think this upcoming season is as uncertain and volatile and high variance as I can remember in recent years. Any of those three teams can win, and then you can make a list of four other teams that I would be like, yeah, I could see Giannis somehow going on this incredible run, the best defense in the NBA, and they make these trade deadline pickups and they end up winning the whole thing next year under Eric Spoelstra. I could see that. I could see the Toronto Raptors. Kawhi Leonard delivers again. The Philadelphia 76ers just got Jaylen Brown with Tyrese Maxey, VJ Edgecombe, who might have been the best rookie last season. And now they got Joel Embiid healthy. Yeah, you could talk me into that. Houston, we'll see. But all of these, I did want to bring this up, actually. Houston not getting in the Jaylen Brown business. There are teams that could have gotten in the Jaylen Brown business and decided not to. And then you have the Team USA aspect. And then you have Brad Stevens trying to get something for Jaylen Brown. Is Houston the most interesting snub of Jaylen Brown? I just feel like that would have been the move. A guy who can be a floor raiser. How much Jaylen Brown could have impacted their half-court offense in the postseason. Yes, KD changes that tremendously if he's healthy in this series in this most recent season. But I just feel like Jaylen Brown, to me, is more of a floor raiser for a team that needs instant offense rather than a ceiling raiser for a team like Philadelphia. And I'm surprised that Houston didn't go for that. And maybe that's indicative of Ime Udoka doesn't think Jaylen Brown is that guy for them. Because if Ime Udoka believed in Jaylen Brown, I feel like he would have been a Rocket.
It could mean that, or it could mean that Ime Udoka really has lost a voice in terms of decision-making there. Because you look at their front office, it is very analytically driven with Rafael Stone at the head of it, with their decisions they make and his history of decisions, his philosophy. Very analytically driven. So if Jaylen Brown is not a top 40 player or a top 60 player on some analytics metrics, where does he rank for the Houston Rockets? Maybe he is perceived as somebody that is overrated as a player. And so maybe Houston was the front office was driving that decision, even if Ime may have wanted it or may have not wanted it. If the coach also didn't want it, I do think that would be quite telling. If Udoka, through the eye test lens, was like, nah, I don't want Jaylen Brown, that would say something to me, Tom. It really would. It definitely would with Ime.
Another question I have.
Another question. Fire away,
Tom. I wanted to ask, because this we did the draft show. It feels like it was months ago. But I mean, was that last week? Yeah, I feel like that was.
It was last week, yeah. It was last Tuesday.
Does the Walker-Kessler trade change your opinion of what the Jazz did on draft night? Because you know I'm a big Cam Boozer guy. But now that they have a loosened up front court where you have Markkanen, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Yusuf Nurkic, if the Walker-Kessler trade gets done before the draft, do you have a different opinion about the fit there for Darren Peterson versus Cam Boozer? Because that's the thought that crossed my mind is, you had four bigs for three positions. Maybe that's not a great fit. But if you have Jaren Jackson Jr. at the five, Cam Boozer at the four, and Lauri Markkanen at the three, that's a lot of size and a lot of shooting around Jaren Jackson Jr. And it just feels like to me, did Utah know that they were going to move on from Walker Kessler on draft night? Or do you think that they ended up realizing, oh, if the Lakers are willing to give them that deal, and they're willing to give us all those draft picks, then we'll make that move. Because I think maybe the calculus changes. If you have Cam Boozer potentially available at number two, if you have Walker Kessler freeing up a spot there at the five. On one hand, Walker Kessler is a great fit next to Cam Boozer long term. But on the other, that's just a lot of bodies in your front court that maybe Cam Boozer isn't a possibility there at number two if you do have an opening at the two guard position.
I think it's a good question. Like, did they know this was on the table then? Did they know they were going to take it then? And they went Peterson anyway. I get the impression they were taking Peterson no matter what. Is my impression. With or without Walker Kessler is my gut feeling there. And I'm sure we'll learn more in the weeks and months and years to come as well. But they still have plenty of size. They just re-signed Nurkic, who suffered a serious loss yesterday with Bosnia losing to Team USA. In the World Cup. Sorry, Nurkic. The Bosnian beast, Yusuf Nurkic. Yeah. Sorry about that. Go Team USA. Even though I didn't watch the game. I was live. I was doing my reaction show. I was doing that yesterday.
You weren't getting a colonoscopy, though.
No, I wasn't getting a colonoscopy like Bill Simmons. I wasn't doing that. But I am looking forward to very much seeing Darren Peterson and all these rookies play in NBA Summer League. Got to get my tickets for the NBA Summer League on Game Time, the Game Time app. Be sure to pick up your Summer League tickets there or any concert tickets you need for the summer. And one thing we are going to see in Summer League, Tom, is something new. News broke during our recording at NBA PR. NBA Communications posted on X. The one free throw rule will be tested at the upcoming NBA Summer League. So with this rule, any foul that would typically result in one, two, or three free throws under standard NBA rules will instead result in a single free throw attempt. That attempt will be worth the same total number of points as the free throw it replaces. Standard NBA free throw rules will apply during the last two timeouts of the fourth quarter and throughout overtime. They also note the NBA G League has used this rule since the 2019-20 season to improve game flow. So the NBA is going to be experimenting with this during Summer League, and I am in favor of anything that improves game flow. I think it makes free throws feel like they matter more when there's only one of them. instead of two of them. Granted, it goes back to the standard way in the last 2 minutes of games, as they noted. But hey, I'm open to experimentation. I'm looking forward to seeing this during Summer League, Tom.
It's going to be making for quicker games, that's for sure. They're going to lose some advertisers. And as someone who was on the Blazers broadcast the last 3 years, that's my time to shine is during the free throws, man.
Oh, no,
it's a
Tom.
Stoppage in play where I can talk and I have basically cleared the floor. Clear me out. I got a high usage play. I'm going one-on-one on the mic. That's when I shine is those two free throws. But all seriousness, I think I like this on paper, but in application, I'm worried, Kev. I'm worried about the physical downside of this rule. Here's what I mean by that. If you play basketball, you know that if a free throw happens, everyone gets a break. It's basically a timeout. If a shooting foul happens, people put their hands on their knees and they get a breather. And we see this with Giannis and we see this with Wemby, is that those two free throws are basically timeouts to recharge the batteries. I think a downstream negative externality of this new rule, if they implement it at the NBA level, I do worry that we're going to see more DNP rests and more resting for NBA player superstars.
Oh,
because
no.
Now the game...
Please, yep. No, Tom, not more of that.
I'm telling you, these breaks, the free throws are basically a way for them to recharge their batteries. And if they're only getting one free throw instead of three free throws in the instance of a fouled three-point shot, I think these guys are going to be a lot more fatigued. And I think on paper, I like this idea that we need to get rid of as many things that take away from the players playing in high level, up and down flow. Basketball is jazz. Shout out to Coach Thorpe. But on the other hand, I feel like if we thought that Wemby playing 28 minutes a game is an anomaly, I think it could be even lower than that next year if we have something like this.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Tom, thank you so much for joining me today, man. We'll also see what happens at NBA free agency. There's still so much to shake out after so much has happened already. Tom, have a good day, man. Have a good weekend. Any fun plans for the 4th? Anything you're going to get going on?
Yeah, we got a big festival going to the fireworks on Saturday, and it's going to be great. The kids are excited. The summer's here, and it's going to be hot in North Carolina, man. So we're going to try to find a pool and be able to cool off. But happy 4th to everybody, and very excited to watch Monday night Team USA. It's going to be a great time to be a sports fan in America, and I'm very excited about the prospects of you and I joining the heat index at Yahoo when LeBron James goes down in Miami. I'm just kidding. We got to find out where he goes, but it's going to be a whole new experience here in the next. I don't know when this marathon of LeBron watch is going to end, but hopefully this time next week we have more clarity on that.
Well, if you need tickets to Monday's Team USA game or to NBA Summer League, be sure to check out the Game Time app. That's where I'll be getting my Summer League tickets. Tom, thank you so much for joining me today. Everybody, happy 4th of July if you're in the United States listening to the FaZe podcast. And have a good weekend, everybody else. Enjoy NBA free agency. Talk to you later. Thanks again to Tom Haverstraw for joining me today. Thank you to Sarah and the team for producing today's episode. I'll be back again. Who knows? Could be tonight. Could be tomorrow, could be on the 4th if LeBron James makes his decision with an emergency podcast. But otherwise, if nothing else does break over the next few days, I'll have another show for sure on Monday as well. So happy 4th, everybody, and hope you have a good weekend.